Today is March 4th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 117, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing pretty good. And I'm assuming you're doing well, too.
I am doing well.
Excellent. That's as it should be.
I'm a bit distracted, though, because I'm using Logic Pro to record on my end for the first time. And I am not even close to an expert on using Logic Pro yet. So I'm kind of trying to watch it while I'm also watching the script.
Well, if it's any consolation, I am mildly distracted because outside my window I can see a little bit of snow, and I spent all last week in Miami where there is no snow. So this whole cold weather thing and Colorado thing is mildly foreign to me today.
I bet it is. I bet it is. Well, welcome back. We're good to have you back, and that's why we're coming a little bit late is because Jeff was traveling. That whole travel thing is so inconvenient doing a podcast.
It really is. And, well, considering I was jumping time zones, well, that's clearly why the whole schedule's messed up for this week.
Indeed. And that must be it, even though really you're on the same time zone, but that's another story.
You're right. That's another story.
All right. So on that very happy note,
news, right?
Yeah, I guess we got some news.
Apple finally updated the MacBook Pro. Microsoft was hit with another hefty EU fine, and it published an open letter to its employees and Yahoo. Congress is considering contract-free cell phone legislation. iTunes is now the number two music retailer, and Apple is hosting a special iPhone SDK in a few days.
Apple Incorporated announced Tuesday an update to the MacBook Pro line. The company introduced new models with a 2.4 and 2.5 gigahertz Core 2 Duo processor thingy, and you can get a build order option for a 2.6 gigahertz processor. Apple is using NVIDIA's GeForce 8600M GT video card with either a 256 or 512 meg option for memory. Jeff, you remember when you couldn't put 512 megs of main memory into a laptop?
I do. And, you know, I also remember those wonderful days when we could have our operating system, applications, and all our documents on one floppy.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it's just amazing that you can get a video card for a laptop today. And not that, I mean, these have been around for a little while, but it still is stunning to me. But, you know, 512 megs of memory just on the video card.
Yeah.
Right. So Apple is shipping the MacBook Pros, the new ones, with the multi-touch-enabled trackpad that was first introduced on the MacBook Air. And the units are housed in the same form factor as the previous generation. That means they look the same. And each model continues to ship with 2 gigs of RAM and a 4 gig BTO option. 200 gig and 250 gig hard drives are standard. You can get a 300 gig BTO hard drive option, and each comes with a built-in EyeSight, 802.11n AirPort, and an ExpressCard/34 expansion card slot. Now, two other things to note. Glossy screens are a BTO option, not a default choice, and the Apple Remote is now a $19 US add-on. Pricing starts at $1,999 for the 2.4 gigahertz base model.
And Apple also introduced MacBook models with 2.1 and 2.4 gigahertz Core 2 Duo processors, or as Brian calls them, thingies. They also include 120 and 250 gigabyte hard drive options. As before, the company is offering two models in white and a black model, which is available only in the fastest configuration. All of the models ship with 2 gigabytes of RAM standard, with 4 gigabytes available as a build-to-order option. The MacBook uses the Intel Graphics Accelerator X3100 for graphics. That's a chipset that uses a shared memory scheme instead of dedicated video RAM. All of the models come with a built-in EyeSight camera, 802.11n AirPort Extreme, Bluetooth 2.0 plus EDR, sudden motion sensors in the hard drives, and all the other fixings. Unlike the MacBook Pro, however, the new MacBook does not include a backlit keyboard, a multi-touch trackpad, and it's available only with a glossy display. Pricing for the 2.1 GHz base model starts at $1,099.
The European Competition Commission of the European Union announced Wednesday that it had fined Microsoft another 899 billion euros. Now, I think with today's exchange rate, that's about, like, what, $6 quadrillion?
Right about there, yes.
All right, that's not true. It's actually 100. Oh, wow. We wrote that wrong, didn't we? It's $135 billion is what that comes out to with the exchange rate. And that's all for failing to comply with the 2004 antitrust ruling. That ruling compelled Microsoft to allow its competitors access to the Windows platform, and the EU found that the company was overcharging competitors for patent licenses needed for said access. The fines are on top of earlier fines stemming from the same antitrust case against Microsoft, with those earlier fines adding up to $1.17 billion in fines. Fines over $1 billion.
Holy crap.
According to a Forbes report, the new fines from Commissioner Neelie Kroes are a retroactive fine for non-compliance by Microsoft prior to October 22, 2007, and are not related to Big Redmond's announcement last week of a new, kinder, gentler Microsoft that was embracing openness and interoperability. Ms. Kroes said in a new press conference in Brussels on Wednesday morning, quote, I hope that today's decision closes a dark chapter in Microsoft's record of non-compliance. She added, quote, we aren't holding our collective breaths. All right. She didn't really say that.
Okay. Microsoft has not yet acquired Yahoo, but Kevin Johnson, Microsoft's president of the Microsoft Platforms and Services Division, has published an open letter that aims to put concerns at ease, including the fact that Yahoo is a non-Windows company. For openers, Mr. Johnson said, quote, we believe our proposal is a compelling one and that the combination of Yahoo and Microsoft creates a more credible alternative to an increasingly dominant player in the advertising industry, unquote. The letter proposed to answer questions, but may have also been designed to slow down the personnel flux in anticipation of a merger. As might be expected, Mr. Johnson also explained how the merger would benefit consumers, developers, advertisers, publishers, and shareholders. The Microsoft letter also addressed the company's stance on integrating Yahoo's non-Windows infrastructure by saying, and put on your thinking caps for this one, folks, because it takes some translation, quote, services we've acquired over the years have been based on both Windows and open source technologies. Although Windows is our strategic platform, and in some cases, the teams ultimately migrated their products to Windows for a variety of reasons, in other cases, we have prioritized continuity and have used open interoperability mechanisms to achieve effective systems integration. Yahoo has made significant investments in both its skills and technologies, so we would work closely with Yahoo engineers to make pragmatic platform and integration methodology decisions as appropriate, prioritizing above all how those decisions would impact customers, unquote.
What a mess. You know, I'd point to the Hotmail debacle. And they moved that from Unix to Windows as an example of how good they are at doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was a real smooth integration.
Yeah, as long as, you know, you're into downtime and hacked services. Yeah, sure.
Right.
As the funeral services for HD DVD continue to wind down, Microsoft finally announced over the weekend it will cease support for the format on its Xbox 360 gaming console. The company said in a statement made via its GameScore blog that it will cease production of the add-on that allowed the Xbox to play HD DVD. The internal drive that ships with the consoles has only ever supported the original DVD format. Microsoft has not said whether or not it will offer a Blu-ray add-on. The company will continue to offer warranty support for those add-ons already sold, and Bloomberg reported that existing inventory would be sold off for half price for those wanting to invest $49 on a dead platform. Microsoft also said in a statement that it did not expect the decision to drop HD DVD to have a material impact on its gaming console business, and added that high-definition movies will continue to be offered for download through its Xbox Live service. Interest in that business may well keep Blu-ray out of the Xbox lineup, unless or maybe even if customers clamor for it. What he didn't say, and what Jeff and I found very interesting, especially when you read between the lines, is that if HD DVD, the lack of HD DVD is not going to have a material impact on its gaming console business, apparently the presence of HD DVD never had a material impact on its gaming console business. And maybe that was at the root of HD DVD's problems to begin with.
It may very well have been. Democratic Representative Ed Markey of Massachusetts has proposed a sweeping bill to alter the terms on which customers purchase mobile phones. The eloquently named Wireless Consumer Protection and Community Broadband Empowerment Act of 2008 recognizes that wireless service has become a replacement for traditional phone service for millions of Americans and seeks to require broader disclosure of fees and terms, require plans with no early termination fee, proration of plans that do have termination fees, offer a contract-free, non-subsidized phone, and a host of other remedies that seek to address practices in the mobile phone industry. The mobile phone carriers have responded by saying that the early termination fee is necessary to offset the cost of subsidized phones, and accordingly, the Markey proposed bill would require carriers to offer a non-subsidized version of the phones. The proposed legislation mirrors the rules that have been in force in Europe for some time now. And seeing the handwriting on the wall, some carriers, including AT&T, have already announced plans to prorate termination fees. That move is probably intended to serve as evidence that the mobile phone industry can regulate itself. Representative Markey's proposed legislation, however, goes into much greater detail to protect the interests of consumers. No doubt that the CTIA and the carriers will fight this bill, but the weight of time, the dependence of so many Americans on cell phones, and the precedent in Europe all portend a sea change in the way Americans purchase mobile phones.
Apple is hosting a special media event on March 6th to reveal details about its soon-to-be-released iPhone Software Developer Kit, or SDK, and also to show off new iPhone features aimed at business use geared to make the iPhone more competitive with the BlackBerry from Research in Motion. It's an invitation sent to reporters. Apple said it will provide a software development roadmap in a meeting at its Cupertino headquarters on March 6th. The announcement means that even though Apple missed Steve Jobs' promised February release deadline for the SDK, it should make it into developers' hands soon.
And wrapping up today's news, move over Target and Best Buy and look at Walmart, because iTunes is now the number two music retailer, and that's according to data released by the research firm NPD Group. Now, that's music retailer, not just online sales. And it's partially due to both an increase in online sales and a decrease in CD sales, with a net decline in total dollars per capita spent on music. Apple took the opportunity to announce that it now has more than 50 million iTunes Store customers, and that it sold 20 million songs on Christmas Day in 2007 alone. The data covered in NPD's research represents music sales in 2007 and excludes wireless, which means cell phone sales. The firm also said that some 29 million consumers acquired digital music legally in 2007, specifying the legal online download services such as iTunes. That represents a 5% increase compared to 2006, and that growth was largely driven by consumers age 36 to 50. In contrast, the report also stated that kids these days, are too busy stealing music through P2P networks to actually pay for it in either CD or digital format.
And that means it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
You know, I thought it might be nice to start out with a little bit of our perspective on what we think is going to come out of this whole iPhone SDK event.
Well, I don't know that I'm sorry, I was distracted by a sound. I think that Apple's wanting to paint this roadmap simply because, boy, I have, wow.
All right, let me ask you a question. Do you think the fact that Apple is having a, and I'm doing air quotes, roadmap presentation signals some kind of change, even if it's very, very small, in the way that they are going to be presenting products going forward, meaning the company might give us a little bit more of an inkling of what to expect than they have in the past?
No. I think what's going
great,
on
next
is
topic.
Apple has made some changes, probably stuff that came out of developing the SDK, as well as what they were seeing from the hacker community, and as well as you know, criticisms that may have come in comparing the iPhone to the BlackBerry, and that they want to basically be able to paint this picture of what the iPhone's going to be like in regards to all that. And I think that the fact that we're getting a roadmap was key to the fact that we're not getting the SDK.
Ah, there we go. That sounds a little more like what I'm expecting to see at the event, which is no SDK, but what the plans for the SDK are.
Right. And, you know, if remember, Steve Jobs said that the SDK would be released by the end of February, and they missed February, and they're clearly not going to make it anytime soon. So we're getting a roadmap.
Right. And I think in this case, Apple kind of ended up backed into a corner thanks to Steve Jobs' promise, and now they're having to do something to keep from having egg on their face, and that's what this event is all about.
Yeah, well, that plus the notion of trying to offer that roadmap of where they're taking the iPhone, especially in terms of business. I don't think that this roadmap is all smoke and mirrors and that it's all being done to sort of disguise the fact that we're not getting the SDK. I think that Apple would just come out and say that, you know, it's taking longer to develop than we thought, and so there's going to be a delay.
Sure.
I think that that's what they would do. But I think that they're taking the opportunity to show off some new ideas for business at the same time to sort of disguise the fact that we're not getting the SDK.
Right. And I don't expect this to be a smoke and mirrors event at all. I think there will be substance to it. And I'm actually really looking forward to hearing what Apple has to say about their corporate plans for the iPhone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure that RIM is very interested too.
I'm sure that RIM is, and whoever's left at Palm is probably going to pay attention too.
Right, which will be great because there's, what, like seven people?
Well, there's a few more than that, of course, but been just whacked over the head by both BlackBerry and now the iPhone.
Which is actually really unfortunate because I remember when Palm hit the scene, man, that was the best thing around, just all the products Palm was making. And it actually makes me kind of sad to see the situation the company's in now where you hear people talk about BlackBerry, Apple, and then sometimes if you're lucky, they might throw Palm in there. But you just don't hear about them like you used to.
All right, quick quiz. How much time did you spend learning graffiti?
Geez, forever. I mean, I learned graffiti and mastered all of the secondary strokes because I found, you know, that you couldn't do a G the way they wanted you to, but if you drew a 6, that worked better, and, you know, draw a 7 instead of a Y. Yeah, does that give you an idea how much time I spent in graffiti?
Absolutely, and I figured you'd spend a lot of time on it. I actually used to play the accuracy game just to practice and to try to beat my score. I mean, you know, how nerdy is that?
Yeah, well, here's how nerdy I am. I never liked Graffiti 2. It was designed apparently to make it easier and faster to create keystrokes, and I found that it drastically reduced my accuracy.
Aha. I actually didn't ever mess with Graffiti 2. I had
good for you.
Stopped using my Palm long before Graffiti 2 came out.
I was using a Palm all the way up until I transitioned into my iPhone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at you.
I know. I'm like so retro hardcore tech.
That's
crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, how many billion dollars did Microsoft get hammered with this time by the EU?
Yeah, it's 1.35. They're looking at like $2.5 billion in fines so far.
That's just
$2.5 billion.
That's insane.
It's so much money. It's so much money.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, we toss around phrases like $1 billion all the time now, but it is so much money.
I don't think most people can comprehend how much money that is.
No, I don't. Yeah, sure.
There's probably countries out there that don't even have a GNP of $2 billion.
Maybe. Yeah, probably is actually a very small country somewhere. But be that as it may, you know, it's interesting to me that Europe has done, you know, just a much better job of going after Microsoft's abuses than the U.S.
I have to agree with you completely on that. I look at what the EU has done, and I look at what the United States has done, and I'm thinking, you know, how can there be that much of a difference in the way different governments are dealing with the whole antitrust issue? It surprises me.
Well,
and I mean, at the same time, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's no surprise that I mean, the EU has always been much more heavily regulated than the U.S. has been, especially for the last 7 years of the Bush administration, which has done everything it could to dismantle as many regulations affecting business in every way possible that it possibly could.
Really? I hadn't noticed that.
I'm sure. Now, it's interesting, and I know from the report that I originally wrote, I pointed out that Microsoft could probably is probably going to appeal the fine, but I also noted that analysts pretty much expect that Microsoft is just going to end up paying it.
You know, I would be surprised if Microsoft did not appeal, because that's just kind of the way the game works. So they're supposed to. So yeah, they need to appeal it now. And it wouldn't surprise me if in the end they just pay the fine and call it the cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's interesting too. I think that the best remedy for Microsoft would have been to break up the company and let them compete. I don't like heavy regulation. I don't like monopolies. I don't like abusive monopoly power is what I really don't like. I think that most monopolies tend to result in abusive monopolies, which is why we have the Sherman Antitrust Act in the first place,
right,
in this country. But rather than, you know, nickel and diming Microsoft and – or, you know, billion and a billion and that's funny to me. Rather than doing that or trying to micromanage every little thing that they do or can do, I would rather have just seen the company broken up so that it couldn't leverage its power from one market to another. And I'm just very angry that that didn't happen in the first place when the Bush administration dropped the ball on that particular aspect of the appeals process after the original antitrust case from the late 90s here in this country. And that would have solved it. I just don't like government cannot run business. And, you know, you look at a lot of the things, like especially the stuff dealing with the browser wars. You know, by the time anything happened with the antitrust case involving the browser market, Microsoft had already killed the browser market. It was too late.
Right.
And, break up the company or don't break up the company. But be that as it may, apparently the EU sees a little bit differently. And they are continuing to ride them about making Windows more open to competitors.
You know, regardless of what the penalty had been or will be, whether it's break up the company, it's more fines, ultimately what I would like to see is some type of action that actually gets a positive result for consumers and Microsoft's competitors. And it looks to me like the whole thing with just fining the company is not what it's going to take. There needs to be something else.
it certainly hadn't. I mean, you know, they had already been fined more than $1 billion, and they were still doing everything they could to circumvent and get around the rulings, which is what they did here in the U.S. I mean, the remedy that was slapped on the company in the U.S. was a joke at best.
Oh, it certainly was.
And Microsoft basically continued to just flout it anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. Whatever. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. We'll continue to keep an eye on the European scene. Let's move on to the socialist cell phone wireless consumer protection and community broadband empowerment act.
That was good. I liked that.
Oh, thank you.
You know, what a great setup. All right. I totally get why we need to have regulations in certain parts of markets. But I'm kind of siding with you on this one, that it feels a bit socialist to tell the industry how they have to conduct business, you know, at this level.
You know, there are many aspects of the cell phone industry that needed to be and will continue to need to be regulated. For instance, I think that the regulations requiring consumers, that you and me and the folks listening to us, to be able to move our cell phone number from one provider to another. That was a fantastic bit of regulation that was needed because the carriers were trying to use that control over the phone number to maintain and keep its customer bases. You know, you didn't want to change from AT&T to Verizon or from Sprint to T-Mobile or whatever because you didn't want to lose your phone number.
You know, that's a really good point. And when the iPhone came out, I was a T-Mobile customer. And, of course, I had to get an iPhone on many levels. I had to get an iPhone. But I would have been really hard-pressed to go ahead and do it if I hadn't been able to bring my phone number with me. I mean, so many people already have that number. And when you have a really cool cell phone number like 867-5309, you don't want to give it up.
I got it. I got your number on the wall. Anyway, yeah, so there are aspects of the early termination fee that, you know, I think that the marketplace will take care of the early termination fee. You know, we're already starting to see these, you know, unlimited calls and unlimited minutes and unlimited this and unlimited that coming in as the carriers continue to try to keep and maintain market share.
Right.
And the part that really, really got my goat about this story is the bit about requiring carriers to offer a non-subsidized phone. That's what business of the government is it whether or not they do that? You want to address the prorated issue? That's fine. But say, you know, a law requiring carriers to carry or to offer a non-subsidized phone is just ridiculous. Let the marketplace take care of that particular issue.
You know, and clearly the marketplace has been taking care of that issue because you can, in the United States, go and buy an unsubsidized cell phone directly from a manufacturer if you want. And if you go and buy an iPhone, you have no choice but to buy an unsubsidized phone. And I think that was the beginning of a market change that's going to grow whether or not there's legislation.
Actually, you know, from what I'm understanding, the bulk of Apple's profits, and when I say bulk, I mean the vast majority of Apple's profits on the iPhone are coming from the kickback the company's getting from AT&T. They're not really making
that. Doesn't surprise me.
That, well, I actually thought that the company was making a profit on the hardware.
Well, I'm sure they are.
I know. I don't
you
think
get the
that
recurring
they are.
Revenue. Ah.
I hadn't really told you that, but some of my sources are telling me that this is not really quite the case. And I don't know for sure. I haven't seen the books. You know,
they haven't called you up on that one yet.
Yeah, Apple hasn't gone ahead and briefed me on this particular issue, but I've got pretty good reason to believe that they're not making much money on the hardware sales since they dropped the cost of the phone from $599 down to $399.
You know, even if they were making more money than I had expected on the iPhone, I still would expect that they would be getting more money from their profit sharing, kickback, whatever you want to call it, from the carriers, because you have the recurring revenue.
That means it's a subsidized phone.
Right.
That means it's a subsidized phone. And that's why there's a lot of concern from, or at least a little bit of concern from analysts over the number of phones that are being bought and jailbreaked and sent over to gray markets.
Oh, right, right. That does account for substantial.
Yeah, that's why there's concern over that. And I heard from someone just last week talking about how he was trying to get a 16-gig iPhone in New York City. And he went to the Apple store at, you know, and they were sold out. And was told that they came in at 10 o'clock. Went in at 10:30, sold out.
Wow.
Ended up going in at 10:05, and what he saw was a line of largely Chinese and Indian nationals buying five at a time.
Huh.
And that according to, and I haven't verified any of this, so you know, do take this with a big grain of salt, but as he checked with the other Apple stores, he said he was finding the same thing. And so, you know, the assumption being, by the way, the reason why that nationality is relevant is because one would assume that these phones are being bought by Chinese and Indian nationals who are then sending the phones back for resale in those markets.
Right, right. And, you know,
so Apple is not pulling any profit from those phones, or at least not much profit from those phones, because they're not going to an AT&T contract. They're not going to a provider that is paying Apple.
Right. So, yeah, however many iPhones really are heading out to gray markets, being unlocked completely and then used on alternate carriers, sure, that's going to have some kind of impact on Apple's return on their iPhone investment.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know all the terms of this particular bill that we're talking about, the 2008 bill.
Yeah, so eloquently named.
Yeah, well, at least it's not the something. It's not something obscene like the Patriot Act, which was incredibly unpatriotic, or the what was the Healthy Forest Act, which basically allowed the gutting of the forest by the forest
right.
industry. It's a legitimately named Wireless Consumer Protection and Community Broadband Empowerment Act. I mean, it's anyway.
Yeah, at least there's truth in advertising in this bill's name.
Yes, exactly. And I think that at least some aspects of it are just going too far, and that the marketplace ought to allow to be run its course.
Well, that's kind of what capitalism is supposed to
do. Yes, you need – I am not a laissez-faire capitalist by any stretch of the imagination, but I do believe in the power of markets to fix most problems. I just think that the government needs to be there to stop abuses. And in this case, it's, you know, just meddling where meddling isn't needed.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. You know, the whole laissez-faire capitalism, my feeling is – in that kind of a market, it always leads to monopoly, and
the monopolies lead to abuses. And you know, Apple
yes.
has monopoly power, or at least it has, you know, close to monopoly power on the download market. But I think that there's enough competition out there to keep Apple on its toes.
Right, and hopefully Apple is a bright enough company that they get that if they try and abuse that position. Ultimately, they'll end up getting screwed, and their competition is going to get more of that market that they want to keep for themselves.
Maybe. We'll have to see on that. I don't think I trust Apple with monopoly power any more than I trust Microsoft with monopoly
power. Well,
neither
do I. However, the fact that we have a more robust market that Apple's competing in, I think is more likely to help keep them in line in this respect.
Yep, probably. Probably. And if anything, I think that iTunes' success in particular has led to Apple being able to keep the labels in check, because the labels are the ones who are wanting to jack up prices, not Apple.
Right. So, yeah.
And I want to see prices go down. I want digital downloads, as most of our listeners will remember, I want digital downloads to be a quarter or, you know, 50 cents at the most. A buck is outrageous.
You know, if some of the bands that are out there that are avant-garde and really on that bleeding edge of where the market is going can use their pull to our benefit, then I think we will see those prices go down. I mean, a good example is Nine Inch Nails. I mean, Trent Reznor is always out there doing what he can to make music more affordable and circumvent the RIAA. And we recently had I just forgot the name of the band that
Radiohead.
Thank you. How do you forget a name like Radiohead? It's only like the most popular band right now. You know, Radiohead did their thing with Pay What You Want for the album. And, you know, big bands like that that have a lot of visibility, I think that they can do a lot to help turn this industry around.
Well, I don't want to get too far off track, but the interesting aspect of that to me is that most of the big bands are actually part of the label establishment. They're the ones who benefit from the status quo with the music industry. So, you know, there's a limited amount of pull we're going to get from the big bands. I think it's going to be more from up-and-coming bands that don't go to labels, that don't need labels, that you know, choose to pursue business in other ways. I think that's where the change is actually going to come from. I think it's going to be a bottom-up change, not a top-down change.
Well, regardless of where the change comes from, I will be happy when it finally happens.
Yep, if and when it happens. We'll have to
if
see.
And when it happens. I'm going to think positive because it's all I've got, man. Don't take that from me.
We're running out of time. We should talk about the new laptops that Apple released and then close this out.
All right. So I want to start by saying I was really, really worried that Apple was going to switch the MacBook Pro keyboard to match the MacBook keyboard, and I'm really glad they didn't.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I think they're going to be using that as one of the differentiation
I hope
features.
So. I hope so.
Going forward, I mean, I think that they're going to keep that. I think that that Apple's always going to try to have the nicest keyboard possible on the MacBook Pro line, and that the MacBook line itself will have a very good but not quite as great option.
Right. Now, my concern came when I saw the MacBook Air at Macworld Expo, and it has the same keyboard style as the MacBook. And I went, ooh, please don't let this be an indication of what's to come for the MacBook Pro.
Sure.
So,
otherwise, you know, this is pretty much just an upgrade. I didn't expect an upgrade this fast. I mean, we got them upgraded late in the fall.
Yeah, I know, we did. But it's interesting that so many people almost immediately were saying, where's the new MacBook Pro, right after one had come out. So,
and what they should be saying is, where is the new Cinema display?
That's exactly what they should be saying.
Where is the LED backlit Cinema display?
You know, I have not had anyone at Apple tell me, well, we just can't get enough quantity to be able to produce these. But my guess is that if I could pin someone down, that would probably be what they say. And I would call them on it, because there's several other manufacturers out there that are producing displays in the size that Apple would make, that are LED backlit, they're the DV displays, the whole nine yards. Why isn't Apple doing it?
Well, yeah, but if you look at them, they're big. They're big and they're expensive. And I don't think Apple wants to ship. I don't think Steve wants to ship a big, thick display. I think he's, you know, Steve is almost always form over function.
You know, I saw a Samsung display at Macworld that was no thicker than the 23-inch Cinema display that's sitting on my desk right now. And it was, I believe, a 24-inch LED backlit display.
You know, I saw that too. I didn't realize it was that thin.
It was surprisingly thin. It was pretty close to the same thickness as the display that I have right now.
Okay, fair enough. And to continue that line of argument, the MacBook Pro line has now been LED backlit for a while.
It has.
So,
now, the 15-inch, did they ever take the 17-inch to LED? I don't remember. I think it's just the 15-inch still. And if I'm wrong, I'm certain that I'm going to get an email from one of our listeners correcting me.
Yep. We always need you guys keeping us in check, by the way. The more eyes possible on what we say, the better for all of us.
That's right.
In this case, I guess it'd be the more ears. But whatever the case, the new models are bitching faster, bigger. They're not faster, but, you know, bigger hard drives.
They're a little bit faster.
They're a little bit faster. They've got better graphics cards and You know, whatever. I'm nothing to write home about.
Unless you don't have one yet, and then when you get it, write home about
it. Now it's even better.
Right. I'm definitely looking forward to getting my hands on one of these because I'm like two revisions back now on the MacBook Pro. Mine doesn't even have an LED backlit display. So
no,
this will be a nice
upgrade.
Actually,
you and I have the same model line.
Right. The 2 gig a hertz model. Right.
Yeah. I think I'm actually a little bit faster than that, but whatever.
Yeah. Close enough.
Right. Right. So on that note, thanks for listening, folks.
Yes, and if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness.
I love that.
And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And, of course, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.